It's time for On Our Minds, and this week, the long list for Britain's Man Booker Prize is out. And for the first time ever, it includes five Americans. It's one of the most prestigious literary awards in the world, and it's kind of a big deal that it's now open to writers from outside the UK. So one of the Americans on the list is Joshua Ferris for his novel To Rise Again at a Decent Hour. It's the story of a dentist with an attitude and will teach you more than you ever wanted to know about teeth. Joshua Ferris sat down with Steve Paulson to talk about and read from the book. Here's how it begins.
The mouth is a weird place. Not quite inside and not quite out. Not skin and not organ. But something in between. Dark, wet, admitting access to an interior most people would rather not contemplate. Where cancer starts. Where the heart is broken. Where the soul might just fail to turn up.
That is great. How would you describe Paul O'Rourke, the dentist, in your story?
Well, he's a little at odds with the world. He's a little aggrieved at various things. He should be very happy.
He's very successful, a successful dentist on the Upper East Side of New York.
He's a fine dentist. He's making a lot of money. He should be relaxed. He should enjoy his comforts, but he just can't. He can't get along with the people in his office, not through really any fault of their own. He is made constantly aware of the forces at play on people because they come in with mouths wrecked in accidents and neglected mouths and cavities that simply refuse to be filled. And he's just on alert at all times at the way in which the world is working against him and his deeper wishes. And so he's a little lost. He's adrift and doesn't really feel like he belongs anywhere. And as such, he gets a lot of his animus from complaint.
Well, in my sense is, he's more than just a little adrift. If you sort of poke beneath the surface of Paul O'Rourke, there's a kind of existential panic there. There's a sense that it doesn't add up. I mean, there's no kind of underlying purpose to his life.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think he's looking for something and does not know what that is. And he's also an avowed atheist, so he has no real option in terms of a deep religious community. And the separation from that makes him even more anxious than he might ordinarily be.
The questions about faith and religion run throughout this book. And Paul, as you mentioned, is an atheist, but he seems to be fascinated by religion. And he seems to kind of pine for people of faith who belong to a religious community. He wishes he could do that, but because he doesn't believe in God, he can't. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm like a white guy, right? I'm just sort of a white male by all appearances, a WASP, I suppose. So I'm kind of welcome anywhere, but I belong nowhere. When I went into college, I saw from the outside in for the first time a lot of subcultures, some of them religious, some of them not. But I did long for some kind of connection on a deeper level that I had never had.
And so you did not grow up religious?
I grew up sort of religious. The Christianity from which I came, all you really had to do was profess your faith. You just sort of had to declare that you believed in God, and then you were saved. You didn't have to do much, you know? So in an interesting way, this was sort of like an orthodoxy, a singularity of belief. What I liked about other religions was a kind of orthopraxy. The way in which they practice was very different from that. So the practice of religion, as I saw it in others, in Catholics and in Jews and in friends of mine who belonged to other religions, they were practicing that religion. They were enacting it either on a weekly or even a daily basis. And while that seemed like a big fuss to me, it also seemed to come with some serious dividends.
Well, you have a passage in the book where you sort of reflect on these questions of atheism and belief, and I'm wondering if you could read that.
Sure. The most unfortunate thing about being an atheist wasn't the loss of God and all the comfort and reassurance of God, no small things, but the loss of a vital human vocabulary. Grace, charity, transcendence, I felt them as surely as any believer, even if we differed on the ultimate cause, and yet I had no right words for them. I had to borrow those words from an old dead order. And so while it was not a word I used, when I fell in love with Connie and became acquainted with the Plotzes, I felt blessed.
That's good. Thanks. Now, the central event that happens in this story is that Paul's professional identity is stolen. Someone comes along, makes a website, pretends that it is about Paul's dental practice, and it's not. Tell us what happens.
Well, he's not just an avowed atheist. He's very determined to stay off the internet, despite the fact that he can't get enough of his iPhone. So when he discovers that somebody has made an entire homepage for his dental practice, he's really flummoxed. It's not something that happens every day. And he also feels deeply violated. The picture of him on the about page is surveillance grade. It makes him look like he's wanted by the FBI. So he's very confused. And naturally, he needs to set out to find out who's done this to him and why. And that sort of sets him on the path toward discovering that he may or may not belong to an ancient religion. And he's got to determine not only if this religion is real, but if he, in fact, is a member of it.
What's the ancient religion?
It's called the Ohms.
Which is, in your story, it's based on an actual tribe in the Bible, right?
That's right. The Ohms, as a people, are generated from the Amalekites in the Hebrew Bible. The Amalekites are the ancient sworn enemy of the Israelites. And once they go from being the Amalekites to the Ohms, in a very similar way to the way in which the Israelites became the Jews at some point, they change their theology entirely and become something that an atheist like Paul may find intriguing.
So you've created this new religion, Ohmism, right?
I have. It's sweeping the nation as we speak.
Was that fun to do?
It was great fun. But I was compelled to write it because I felt at odds with the reigning belief that unless you have a faith in God, you can't join a group. You can't really join a religious group. If you're a spiritual person, you may have religion in one respect, in that you commune with the Almighty, you commune with the Eternal. But you don't really join a community. And so you really have to kind of buy into one brand to commune. And that seemed, I don't know, unfortunate. And I wanted to give this person, this character of mine, the opportunity to commune with a group of people who may in fact be insane, but nevertheless are his.
Now, the piece of the story in your novel is that a lot of this plays out on the internet. Paul is outraged at the idea that his identity has been stolen. There's been this whole fabricated story about himself on his website, or not his website, but pretending to be his website. And then he gets kind of sucked in to the idea about this strange religion, and he becomes sort of fascinated by it.
Yeah, I wanted to find out what the interstices were between religion as an ancient form and the internet as a novel communication tool. Where did they link up? What's possible in this brave new world of online exchanging with respect to these ancient ways of thinking? And so I was really interested in seeing how a religion might be created whole cloth on the internet. So that was a lot of fun for me and part of the reason to write the book.
Joshua Ferris is the author of To Rise Again at a Decent Hour. It's just been long-listed for the Man Booker Prize. Ferris spoke with Steve Paulson. And you can find the extended interview on our website, ttbook.org.